and that many of today's revolutionaries are repeating the errors of yesterday's revolutionaries.
Which, of course, they don't know about the errors of yesterday's revolutionaries. But that's true. We've had a... The worst thing that we continue to repeat is the splintering process. We don't look back and see that many times in history there have been opportunities for tremendous strides forward that have been smashed at the last minute by the fragmenting process, and that we have got to find ways to deal with ourselves as human beings effectively enough that community becomes a possibility for us. Community is something one has to work at. It's not simply an ideological necessity. It's something that you have to prepare some kind of groundwork for within yourself. That's why I like the general approach that we're into with the Quaker Project right now.
Which is perhaps another way of explaining why nonviolent people, like people involved in the Quaker Project and like, can establish a rapport or a coalition with the Black Panthers.
That's right. We work with the Black Panthers. We work with the Young Lords. The fact that we're heavily into nonviolence has not interfered with the relationship at all. It's probably enriched it. There are people in the movement in New York who for years now have been extremely turned off to nonviolence and to anything that sounds like nonviolence, mainly because they've had really lousy experiences with a bunch of people who have used a nonviolent rhetoric as an excuse for taking responsibility for what's happening to people. So it doesn't surprise me that they're turned off to nonviolence. When they see people who are talking nonviolence and functioning effectively in the community, their attitude toward nonviolence changes.
From my own point of view, I think one of the truly bad mistakes of the revolution as it exists right now, one of its bad mistakes, it's simply its inability to speak with the so-called silent majority, or just the person who's never had any sort of historical experience, who knows little about history, who knows little about what is actually happening in his own environment, and that people have not been able to talk to him on as low a level as a Spiro Agnew does, or on a high as level as Spiro Agnew does, if you understand what I mean.
Well, a large part of the movement has been a giant, very complicated clique that has been very heavily into self-righteousness and has, in effect, defined most human beings as being a species apart, not capable of perceiving what's happened to them in their own lives or of imagining a better possibility for themselves and their families and for their planet. So they haven't been interested in communicating with this other species because they've written them off to begin with. Consequently, one of the pressing jobs in the movement is to deal with this self-righteousness or whatever term you want to apply to it. That's something that I think that we're doing now. We've had instances of breakthrough in the past when we moved from a general hostility to guys in the military to a very supportive and sympathetic relationship with guys in the military, and that we've at least been able to notice the difference between the lifer and the draftee, or the guy who volunteered because the draft exists and didn't want to be drafted. We've been able to revive our sense of humanness for those people, and I think that it's possible for us to extend that process enormously, to begin to understand the humanness within policemen, for example, despite what they do so often with their roles in society. We've been able to understand that it isn't because of some miracle in our own private genes that we have become who we are, and that just as others have turned us on to the extent that we're turned on, we can tend to have that effect for other people if we treat them as humanly as we have been treated humanly by those who turned us on. You know, it wasn't the people who disliked me that got my imagination going, revived. You know, And it isn't the people who dislike another who are going to turn that person on. You know, dislike is going to is just going to heighten the distance between the two. You know, so this process of reviving our appreciation of the humanizing experience, I think, is going to be having a very obvious effect on the quality of the movement in the immediate future. You know, especially the movement as a kind of cohesive entity that is, for one reason or another, operating out of a nonviolent orientation.
Our time is almost up, Jim. Is there anything that you think should be included that you may have left out?
Well, I'm always concerned in this kind of a conversation, you know, I begin to feel like, you know, I'm in some kind of a pulpit. I also feel cornered by the fact that there seems to be no space in radio for silence, and that very often I discover that I'm compulsively racing forward with syllables to fill the silence, you know, and I hope to make the meaningful syllables, but at the same time, what would be much more germane to the moment would be to stop and to listen very closely, to let it seep in, to think about what I've been asked, and to come back with a silent birthed response, a response that kind of went into the womb of silence for a time and discovered itself more fully.
Well,
yeah. Well, I guess that's about all.
Yeah,
the time
is
anyway.
Just about up. But if anyone wants to carry on a discussion with you, where could they write to you? You know, if they're interested in Emmaus House or in the Appleseed Collective or in the Quaker Project.
Well, if people are interested, we are interested in them. I hope that's obvious from what I've said. And could simply call up at Emmaus House, which is on East 116th Street, 348-5622. And that's EMMAUS. Or come to, or call or write or something, the Quaker Project on Community Conflict down on 2nd Avenue. There are things that we're doing. There are classes, there are discussion groups, there are action groups that exist now. They're having to do with the farm workers and with various other projects that are going on in New York. And people are needed. And there's a lot in it which I think is not only necessary but which is a pleasure. So people can come and see.
For the last 55 minutes, we've been speaking with James Forrest. Do you have any sort of label? Some people may have tuned in late, and I'll say James Forrest, and they'll say, "Who's James Forrest?"
Well, I write, and I'm a bicyclist, and I work with Emmaus House and the Quaker Project on Community Conflict.
And for Pacifica Radio, my name is Bob Ortiz.
Right here in a helicopter about 3,000 feet above the Eakin Town little village of Yurtun in Vietnam, and we're preparing for, what is it, the 8th annual?
This is the 8th annual Vietnam Games, and we are here, as we have been every year previously, covering the exciting Vietnam Games. Would you like to describe, as we go down into Yurtun, the landscape?
Well, the landscape, of course, has been defoliated for the event. A lot of chemicals have been sprayed around here. A lot of care has been made to make sure that there are no leaves on the trees, that the bushes are black and sooty, that there is space for the events to take place. And we have a whole, I would say that's quite a roster of events you have
we
over there.
We certainly do, yes. Among others, of course, we'll be covering the Decapiton.
Oh, yes, I'm looking
very
forward
exciting
to that.
Event.
Last year's was quite exciting as well.
It certainly was, and it was a toss-up. It was a toss-up. And speaking of the toss-up, we will also be having the hand grenade toss, the ever-popular hand grenade toss.
And the, we wouldn't want to miss the running with the torch, the symbolic torch, as they go from hooch to hooch, burning the individual hutches or hooches of the slope heads where they live and watching them come out to participate in the games. Come out, wherever you are.
And
what
of
we're
course,
looking out to do right now, as you
the,
see.
We'll also be having the very colorful bayonet thrust. We are dropping down now into the village of Yortoun, where we will be landing and taking our places, as always, in our broadcast hut.
Our glass booth, as it is.
Yes.
A glass booth which has been bulletproof so that no fragments or shrapnel or from exploding mines or hand grenades will bother us or disturb us in our broadcasting of this event. The eyes of the world are turned right now to my tune, your tune, and it is, of course,
our tune,
yes. Whatever the old song is.
Sure. Just name your tune.
Well, whatever
yes.
It is, it's going to be something that the boys will remember. It
certainly will
it's
be history. Exciting.
It's been going on since the beginning of mankind. Is it just one more chapter in the history of war and war games?
As you can hear now, of course, the helicopter is, I believe we have set down, and the rotary blade has begun to slow down and stop. And
We're being welcomed now by just a small amount of small arms fire, little puffs of smoke, and lead bullets zinging around, but not enough really to create any hazard or
hi there, cutie. Piece of candy? Hershey bar?
Well, that was Jack Fleischer offering a Hershey bar to a waif who was going to participate in the games with just a few minutes. Now let's
this is, of course, Jack Fleischer, along
Norm
with
Klisch,
yes, right here at the 8th annual Vietnam
your tune,
games.
Games. Your all right, let's Vietnam go over games. To our the glass booth now and get ourselves comfortable. Can you
see? No. Duck down. You better duck down, Jack.
Oh, yes,
quick.
Oh my goodness, it's a mighty ball. Yes. Well.
Watch out. It's mine. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, now here we are.
What flag was it? Now, there was a man. We're now inside at this moment and seated.
Inside the, of course, protected, fully protected glass booth at the games. Now, would you like to describe the first event
well,
that's going on
Well, the first event,
now,
as I can see, as I look on my papers, is Lawrence Henderson, Spec 4, with the symbolic torch. He is now running from hooch to hooch. There he's touching him off, roof to
very
wall.
Exciting. Yes. Very exciting.
Flames are coming up out of one. He's on the next.
All we can do, of course, is describe it to you.
The visual around now. He's running around.
Very exciting. Yes. There goes another hut up in flames.
Work on that one, would you? Probably had a lot of storage.
I hear some screaming, Jack.
Oh, yes. Some of the black robe peasants are running out. I see now that several of the soldiers are marching in. They've taken up position. They've stormed the Roman phalanx. That is the traditional and classic Roman phalanx. If you look at that, Jack, what do you think of that?
That sure is. That's something that's breathtaking.
It
breathtaking.
Is breathtaking. The boys
just
have been briefed. They've been told to search and destroy. They're into it now. As you can see, their M16s are chattering. People are following right and left.
And there goes Lieutenant Pulley. There goes Lieutenant Pulley now. What is he doing over there?
Lieutenant Pulley is, yes, he is. He's attempting to liberate some of those Vietnamese. I would call them, are they toddlers or infants? Can you tell? Are they walking?
Well, I'd call them infants.
Yes, he's liberating them from life, giving them a chance to seek out heaven or some other.
Notice, of course, how the truly fine game player wastes no ammunition at all, but every shot is made to count, of course, at the 8th annual Vietnam Games.
And I would say that the peasants are laying down. They're dying magnificently, right and left. The
one right on top of the other.
They stack up like cordwood, Jack. It's truly amazing. The crowd has gone wild.
Very moving sight. Very moving
very
sight.
Moving
yes, you can hear. There goes the... Whoa, look at that. The hand grenade toss. Direct on, it has wiped out four generation families.
That is a record
Isn't,
for the
I
book.
Think that
I suspect
record.
A gold medal, or at least a bronze medal, will be coming out of this event now. And it looks to me like it's just, well, it, this is a record breaker.
The survivor peasant wailing event is beginning.
Yes. Oh, it's put him out of his misery time.
Yes.
Now he's being dispatched with some ease. Well, this is really... very, very
beautiful.
Beautiful.
What form, what grace, what style.
Almost poetic, you know.
Beautiful.
Very,
just
the way the hand was in the air and it came down describing a small arc. That
did,
is...
Did you see the spasm? Did you see the spasm, Jack?
I did. I want to tell you that that has earned the shooter. He looks like as his officer Spangler, Lieutenant Spangler, and looks to me like he's made about 20 points on the event.
Definitely. He looks like he's pulling out way ahead. Yes, Charlie Company is just gathering points here, head over heels.
If I'm not mistaken, he is now going to try for the extra points. He's removing the gas canister from his... Yes, he is removing the gas canister from his Sam Brown belt. He has now tossed a gas canister into the schoolhouse.
Look at that. Listen to the crowd. Listen to the crowd. It's ear-splitting. It's just ear-splitting from our broadcast group, which, of course, is really soundproof.
And also American music. We don't have to read the boxing films, whatever his name is. But this is a tremendous event. It's really tremendous. We've seen some form of action here that has not been seen since the Philippines. Were you covering that in those days?
No, I was a streamer.
Where were you streaming? I've never been able to.
I was at Fort Dix Training Center.
Oh, were you?
Yes.
As you know, I was with the Bataan Death March. I was on that one, and of course, broadcasting for the Japanese at the time. And I want to say that the attitude of the boys on the march, of course, was tremendous. They had a sense of responsibility, of duty, of wanting to, once they started the march, to get right to Manila and finish it.
Well, there's a slight break in the action here. Why don't we pause now for a word from our sponsor?
Hello, boys and girls. Well, this is Uncle Mars from Patriot Toys. You remember Patriot Toys, boys and girls. That's the company that brought you the American flag game that you enjoyed so much last Christmas. Remember that game, boys and girls? That's the game where you got to put the stars and the stripes and the bars on the American flag. It was a fun game for the entire family. Well, Uncle Mars is back this year with another new one. I mean, it's going to be a big seller, so I hope you're the first one on the block to get a hold of it. It's called the Song Me Massacre Game, and it's fun for the entire family. You play it like Parcheesi. First, you throw the dice on the table to see who gets on what side. Maybe your ma and your pa get to be the Viet Cong snipers, and you and little buddy get to be the American patriotic troops that go in and clean up an entire Vietnamese village. Think of the fun you'll have liberating those slant-eyed slopeheads from their lives. Boys and girls, this is the Song Me Massacre game. It runs on batteries. The batteries are not included, but they can be gotten. They're Japanese batteries. They come in a special plastic case. They cost 36 entries, and they're just terrific. Now, boys and girls, over here is a fragmentation shrapnel game where you actually throw these hand grenades at each other. They go off. They're harmless. A little puff of smoke. It's a small flame, and it's awful lot of fun to play with, especially at empty lots. Also, we have the Dr. Jeff eye surgery kit in case one of the fragmentation bombs goes off and gets a little serious. Well, there are a lot of toys on the market this year for this Christmas, and I want you to remember that Uncle Marsh says to you for this Christmas, it's peace on earth and goodwill to all men. Also, just right here is a new one. It's the hippie game. The entire family can play. It's the Sharon Tate game. You'll need five or six people. Some are victims and some are, well, the offenders. They come in the house with the plastic knives and some weapons, shoot the place up. It'll be fun to play. What you do is you throw the dice on the table after you've made up the size and see who goes to what space on the board. Now, here's one space. Let's go to the bathroom and get your head cut off. Here's another one. Be found under bed in bedroom. Boys and girls, this is going to be a safe and sane Christmas. Take it from me, Uncle Mars, Santa's helper, that we're going to get even the little babies in on this. So once again, let me wish you all a real big Christmas and hope you have a happy and healthy...
Norm Fleischer along with
Jack Clish.
Back at the action here. The 8th annual Vietnam Games.
War Games. It certainly is a day of excitement. You notice the weather is a very bracing 68 degrees. The air has been clear up to the point where the game started. Now it's overcast with smoke and debris. The search and destroy operation, of course, these games are coming off without a hitch. It's a tremendous experience for all of us. Oh, if you'll glance over there, Jack, because you can see the, yes, they are using now the Olympic-sized rice paddy for some of the fleeing Viet Cong. Some of them are being shot right out of the water and everything tossed into it and serving blown directly into the air. Yeah. So this is the reason. Of course, that will, as you know, as I know, that will also influence the body count. That when you destroy a person in the center where he's just fragments, of course, you don't get a chance to count him as an exact one of the known enemy dead. But however, we are now continuing with it. It looks to me like an exciting moment. The village is almost leveled.
As you said, Norm, it is a perfect day for outdoor activities. As a matter of fact, the temperature at the Bao Dai Pagoda is 78 degrees.
Which will be rising to about 1,300 once they put the torch to it.
Yeah. It's clear and mild here, of course, with a slight nip in the air.
I wonder if you could raise the white flag. Several of the troops are now shooting at us.
Oh, well.
Start picking off the pass, but I don't know how long before we'll be safe here. I'll wave this flag.
It doesn't seem to be doing any good, Jack. There seems to be an intensification. They're coming at us, Jack. The helicopters are warmed up.
I see them.
Jack, I don't mean to panic. Is the helicopter warmed up? Can't we get back out into the helicopter?
No, we can't. We'll just have to stay on the ground. Orders come from above to cease and desist, to allow us to continue our contest. We are in serious danger, but I think... This is Jack Fleischer, and it looks to me like I'll be continuing the report on my own. We have, of course, witnessed once again the 8th annual Vietnamese War Games here in Yur Tun, another village which is rapidly going down. Jack, would you care to take the...
Games.
Well, I see the flames are subsiding and the smoke is in the air, and once again another 8th annual Vietnamese war game has come to an end. Medals will be awarded. There will be the sound of the trumpets as the victory is announced to the world. Tremendous pleasure. Jack Fleischer, hoping to see you again here next year. Come. So long, and remember, keep your weapons dry.
That was a satirical view. Tonight you heard Vietnam War Games with Steve Post and Marshall Efron. That was a rebroadcast of a program first heard on Christmas 1969. The technical production on that program was by David Rapkin. This is WBAI in New York City. We're now about 4 minutes behind schedule.